You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during this show, I'm really fortunate to be able to share the stories, the expertise and the knowledge of business leaders, large and small, with you, the listener. And this week is going to be a brand new topic we've never discussed. We're going to be talking about smart homes, solar, energy, and to do that, we're joined by three great local experts. We're joined by Jason Hobbins of Energy My Way, Daniel Wallace of Happy Smart Homes, and Michael Holliday of Palmer and Partners Architects. This is the Business Brunch. We're going to be introducing our three experts after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, we're going to be talking about the modern home. We're going to be talking about smart homes and energy and using tech and all those things that I'm sure we should be doing and would love to be doing that. So to do that, we're joined by three great local experts. So let me introduce them to you. Jason, I'm going to start with you. For those who don't know you and don't know Energy My Way, please introduce yourself.
So, hi, yeah, I'm the Managing Director at Energy My Way. We're an Oxfordshire-based renewable energy company. So we install solar panels, batteries, heat pumps, and we've been doing that for about 18 years.
Amazing, amazing. Lots to unpack there. And Daniel, similarly with you, tell us all about you and Happy Smart Homes.
Hello, Ben. So I am a bit of a tech nerd. I absolutely love anything that I consider cool tech. And that could be things like smart doorbells, security cameras, robot vacuum cleaners that can now climb upstairs. But I've realized over the years when setting this stuff up in my own home that it takes a bit of tech knowledge, takes some tools that not everyone has, often a lot of patience. So I set up Happy Smart Homes to help people get that tech in their home. So I'm building a network of local tech experts around Oxfordshire who can go into customers' homes, install their tech for them, get it working, and most importantly, show them how to use it so that more people can benefit from that tech that they can just buy off the shelf from John Lewis or Currys.
Amazing. And last but certainly not least, Michael.
Thank you. My name is Michael Holliday. I'm an associate partner here at Palmer & Partner Architects. I'm also a certified passive house designer that sort of summarizes what we try and achieve as a firm. So we work mainly in the residential sector, and most of the stuff that we do is private clients, so one-off homes or large extensions, all of which are at standard, are pushing the passive standards, depending on the client, depends on how far they want to push that and whether they want to go for the full certification. And then we also do work with some small developers that sort of up to sort of 4, 5, 6 houses that are trying to set themselves apart from the large developers. So they want to have all the tech in the homes that pushes that sustainability level. They want to make sure the fabric is up there with where it should be, not where it's required. And then on top of that, they're then working with all the sort of the BNG numbers that don't necessarily need to meet on certain sites, but they're trying to achieve that because what they're trying to create is a product that's going to last for a long time and set themselves apart, as I said, which is exactly how we work as a company.
Amazing, amazing. Three great businesses. I'm really, really keen to talk more over the remainder of the show. But before that, the three of you have one really tricky question each. You need to be a radio DJ just for a moment. So Michael, I'm going to pick on you first. I'm sorry. what's your song choice and why have you picked it?
Yeah, so it'd be Pink and White by Frank Ocean. And it's just one of those tracks that takes me back actually to my master's and doing a project with one of my good friends at uni that we regularly keep in contact with. So it's just it constantly reminds me every time it pops up of that period of my life.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that great song chosen by Michael, we've heard from Jason, Daniel and Michael about their businesses, Energy My Way, Happy Smart Homes, and Palmer and Partners Architects. And today we're talking all about that. We're talking about the future of homes and we're talking about some of the things we should really consider. So Jason, I think I'm going to start the conversation with energy, if that's okay. What are some of the things that our listeners could be considering for their houses? What are some of the alternative energy options?
So I think the two most popular ones and the ones that people would have heard about most are solar and heat pumps. Mm. So solar really started to take off in the UK from about 2010, 2011. We had the feed-in tariff scheme, which a lot of people would have heard about, a subsidy. That lasted for about 5 years. Over the last, I suppose, 3 or 4 years, we've seen a real drop, maybe a little bit more than that, actually, real drop in price in solar and batteries as well. So a solar panel now is cheaper than a fence panel. And given sort of traditional installation is probably about a third of the cost that it was in 2010. So clients are getting, we've got a much, much wider market, wider audience. Mm. Solar's very much been commoditized, and now batteries have been added to that, and the cost of batteries have come down, technology's improved, storage has gone up, and you know, I can't remember the last time we installed a solar array without a battery. The two are inextricably linked now. And so that's generating electricity to supply directly into your home, either directly or via the battery. And then the other one is heat pumps. And I think people are probably hearing quite a lot about particularly air source heat pumps. The government has set incredibly ambitious targets to strip out our boilers and put heat pumps in. That's fraught with an awful lot of challenges. But yeah, I think those are the two technologies where we're really seeing. And the heat pumps are generating hot water and space heating, replacing your boiler.
No, really fascinating. Really keen to delve more into that. But Daniel, Jason touched there on technology, and technology has come a very, very fast way. What are some of the tech things that are really accessible that we could be having in our houses, and some of the things to consider?
Great question. Frankly, there is a lot. If you think back 15 years, the tech that anyone had in their home, you might have had a TV, computer or laptop, maybe one of the early smartphones. That was just after the first iPhone came out. Fast forward to 2026, and you can buy a Ring doorbell or a smart light bulb when you're shopping in Tesco's. These things are everywhere, and they genuinely do bring quite a lot of convenience or security or entertainment improvements to your home. So any of the big brands that you might have heard of, so Ring are very popular for their doorbells. You see them absolutely everywhere in their cameras. They also do an alarm system, but there's many other brands that do similar things. Doorbells from companies like Eufy, from Nest. You've got smart speakers like the Alexa smart speakers. Sorry if anyone's got one at home that's just picked that up. And Google have an equivalent version as well. My wife particularly loves the smart lights that we've got around our home, because with the touch of a button, you can just turn them on, turn them off, dim them. We can be sat on the sofa, and with a button just next to us, we can dim the lights to be the perfect level for when we're watching TV. So there's a whole range of tech, and it just keeps getting better, which is the best thing. Every year, there are tech shows in Vegas in January. There's one in Berlin, and they announce amazing new tech like the robot vacuum cleaner that can now climb up the stairs. So that one's not quite out and available for people to buy yet, but it is coming. And the reality is that when people get a lot of this tech home, many people have the ability to do this stuff themselves, but often you don't have the time. So it sits in a box, or you get the stuff out and you realize you need a drill that can get into brick, or you start to set it up and it just doesn't quite work properly. So those are the people that we help out by going into their homes and getting that tech working for them.
No, really, really, really fascinating. Michael, I'm keen to talk about some of the great modern homes that you're working on now. Not to make our listeners jealous, but what are some of the things that you're seeing on some of those small developers that you were speaking about in terms of who are creating wonderful properties? If we talk about energy and tech and anything under that, I'm just quite keen to share with our listeners what those new properties feel like and look like and what they involve.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a difficult one to try and describe. So I'll do my best. The key thing really is the fact that, and when I've done sort of presentations and stuff or tried to explain it in the past, everyone's idea of a future home basically looks like a spaceship. They think the tech is going to be so far advanced and everything that they'll basically, that is what a future home is. But actually, a future home could look like, just thinking of the pictures behind me, it could look like this one or this project or a sort of traditional farmhouse down here. It can look like anything. The key thing that makes it and sets it apart is how it feels. And the technology plays a part, how it's heated plays a big part. It's all how it's detailed. And how I try and describe it is describe it as a comfortable home to live in. So that can be a couple of different factors, but it's comfortable in terms of the environment that you're creating is a comfortable one. So if you went and had a certified passive house, for example, during the summer, the criteria is that it's sitting at 25 degrees, and in the winter it's 20 degrees. So you're talking only a 5 degree swing with minimal heating and cooling, and that 5 degree swing is tiny if you compare it to a standard UK home. And it's freezing cold like it is now, and you go away for a weekend, you're coming back, and the internal temperature is going to be the same as the outside, which is incredibly uncomfortable. Same as the opposite way around in the summer. So it's comfortable from a heating standpoint. The air quality, and I'm sure Jason will talk about air quality during this the discussions we talk about today, but the air quality is far improved compared to a normal one, because it's done through a mechanical process when the air is filtered and all sorts. So that can have its benefits for all sorts of reasons. Least of all, if you've got allergies and things like that, obviously the benefits of filtered air. It's comfortable on your budget because to run a passive house, for example, is the same cost for a year as it would take a standard current new build to heat for 1 month. So it's a massive saving. It's sort of up to 90% is sort of the figures that they try and promote. And you can go into more, but that's sort of how I describe it, is it's a comfortable house to live in. It's just one of those things. Unfortunately, you can't walk into a normal home, walk through a door and feel the space of what it could be like. But yeah.
No, really interesting. And my and Jason, sorry, this comes on really nicely in terms of that normal home. What are some of the things you can do in a normal home? Maybe not to go to that level, but to, for our listeners who are sat in their 60-year-old three bed semi, like what are some of the things they can consider? And
I think there's a real difference between a sort of a new build home that Michael's talking about designing and an existing property. And in the UK, we have a hugely diverse, you look in Oxford, we've got a huge di hugely diverse property portfolio. I think just touching on what Michael was saying about new build properties, effectively, it's very, as Michael says, it's quite difficult for people to understand what that's going to feel like. They might be moving from a 1920s leaky traditional construction house into a new build. And effectively, what Michael's designing is heavily insulated airtight box. So it needs very, very small amounts of heat, but it needs ventilating properly as well. And so you're getting fresh air in, stale air out, but you're preheating that air as well. So the sort of technologies we're talking about, like solar and heat pumps, work absolutely brilliantly with those types of properties because they require very little energy, and you can combine that with solar, and you're really offsetting your costs with the revenue and the energy savings you're getting from the solar. I think with an existing building, we've got to be really, really careful about what we recommend for clients, because if you're looking at heat pumps, for example. The big difference between a heat pump and a traditional boiler is the temperature of the water that they're producing. So we're used to turning on a boiler, generates 75, 80 degrees of hot water through your radiators, heats a house up really, really cold. But as Michael says, you turn that boiler off, the house goes cold really, really quickly. Whereas a heat pump will generates much lower flow temperatures, maximum about 50 degrees. There are heat pumps now that generate higher than that, but traditionally we don't want them to generate temperatures more than 50 degrees because their efficiency starts to drop. So Heat pumps are only really appropriate for houses that have certain levels, meet certain levels of insulation and air tightness. Otherwise, you might swap a £1,000 gas bill for a £1,500 electricity bill because the heat pump's just trying to work too hard. So there's really careful analysis that we have to do with any new client who's looking at putting a heat pump into an existing property. We do detailed heat loss reports. There's a lot of calculations we do in there to really establish whether a heat pump is viable. So heat pumps are, very much having their moment at the time. There's a lot of talk about them, but they're not for everyone. And I think that careful analysis about establishing whether it's appropriate for any particular property is incredibly important.
What's your take on this, Daniel?
So heat pumps, what's just been described, are genuinely incredible. One of my friends moved into a house, he's getting one installed, he's very excited about it. But they are quite long-term investments, and they only fit the right homes, like Jason's just described. So one of the good things about smart home tech is it's more modular. It's sort of brick by brick. You could buy a smart thermostat, for example, to retrofit, so to put into an existing home, to take control of the existing heating system, which is quite low budget to do. So it might be suitable in the homes where a heat pump might not be the right fit. And that allows people to set the schedule on their phone very easily. But also it means that if you're out of the home, unexpectedly, you can turn the heating off when you're not there. So it's not, you're not heating an empty home unnecessarily. And equally, it means that if you're anticipating coming home early, you can turn the heating on before you get home to make sure that the house is warm. Similarly, you control the hot water. So with those sorts of things, you can easily control it with your phone. But also, some of these smart thermostats can learn and read from your behavior. So if they don't sense someone walking past them over the course of a day, they'll check and see if anyone's in the house on your phone, and they can switch the heating off for you to save you that heating.
No, really interesting. And what about yourself, Michael? What's your take on this?
It's very much similar to what Jason's saying, and we have the conversation about air source heat pumps with every single client, or variations of the air source heat pumps and MVHRs. More so with renovations than we do with a new build. With a new build, it's very easy to make sure that they're going to run efficiently. With renovations, it's to what extent are you going to renovate? So most clients, when they're looking to renovate, certainly a large scale one, they're going to be insulating to allow them to function properly. But also, there's a lot of companies out there, and builders out there that have put air source heat pumps in to properties that aren't either spec'd to appropriate levels, or the building hasn't been done to a certain extent, or things have, it might be that there's a certain type of insulation that's been put on, and they put a cheaper insulation, so therefore it's having to work harder. And because it's having to work harder, it's then going to cost that extra £1,500 electricity bill that Jason mentioned. Or it's a case of it's very, very noisy because it's working so hard. And so there's a lot of that out there that you're trying to explain to people that's not the case, that shouldn't be the case. I understand that your builders strongly recommends against it, but actually, and it's difficult because you don't know, unless you've actually been to that property and seen it, you're trying to explain how that shouldn't be the case. And then you're trying to sort of argue against something that they've already got stuck in their head. But in actual fact, they work very, very well in the vast majority of cases, as long as the right procedures have been put together. And this is where the technology side of it is super, super key, because you can review and see how it's all working and functioning, and it gives you so much data now. And I can't remember who it was that told me about it, but it's almost when you've got a dial on the wall as well. And this might be Jason, I'm sure Jason said this before, but when there's a dial on the wall, people have this sort of need to play with it, and even more so with an app. And actually, if it's just left alone and done what it should do, it's going to work 1,000 times better than if you're trying to tweak it and adjust it constantly. And that's where the tech side comes in, because it can then do that for you. It's just trying to stop people fiddling with things that don't actually know what they're fiddling with.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, really, really good insight. We're going to have a song, and then we'll continue the conversation. And to pick that song, Jason, it's your turn. Can you match the high level set by Michael?
So I'm going to my song is Let Down by Radiohead. Oxford band, a consistent companion of mine, their music for over 30 years, and this is from the 97 album OK Computer.
Interviewing Oxfordshire's business leaders. This is the Business Brunch Podcast, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Build relationships with the ultimate goal of growing your business. obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about your house, which will impact all of you. We're talking about energy and technology, and really how to ensure that, I think the phrase that Michael used, that you're living in a comfortable space, is really, really important. Jason, I'm keen to move over to solar, if that's okay, because I think that's a big one. If we look at our roads are now full of electric cars. And I presume that that would mean that in a lot of cases we're using more energy. And of course, it's really important we care for the planet, isn't it? What's the process of solar, and we've spoken a lot about heat pumps, but what's the benefits of solar, and when should or shouldn't you have solar?
So I think the so solar PV photovoltaics generate electricity. So when the sun is shining, more they generate electricity. That electricity is then fed either directly into the house. So if there's demand in the house, it feeds the house. So you're not importing electricity from the grid. If you're generating too much electricity, you can install that electricity in a battery, so that when the sun goes in and you need additional electricity from the solar isn't generating enough, as opposed to pulling that in from the grid and paying for it, you're taking it from your battery. One of the big changes over the last 3 years are the overnight tariffs, cheap tariffs overnight. So it's a bit like when I was growing up and we had an Economy 7. So you can now charge, most EV owners will know about this because they charge their car at night. You can charge your battery overnight. And that, as opposed to paying 21, 24 pence per kilowatt hour, whatever your daytime rate is, you can pay as little as 7 or 8 pence per kilowatt hour. So you're charging your battery at night, so when you wake up in the morning, you've got 15 kilowatt hours of electricity stored in a battery that you've only paid 7 pence per kilowatt hour for. So you're basically paying a third of the price of your electricity. And then you can run your house on the electricity from the battery, and then you're topping that electricity up from the solar during the day. So we've changed. I mean, my solar surveyor actually says, he said he more a battery designer now that then just adds panels. So it's about tailoring the understanding what the client's energy usage is, and then tailoring a system, designing a system with the correct number of panels and the right size battery to really minimize their energy bills. You can also sell additional electricity that you're generating back to the grid as well, so you're earning revenue as well. So it's it grew very quickly, 2010, 2011, 2012, through these tariffs. The government cut the tariffs, pulled the tariffs about 2015, but the price of panels have dropped massively since then. So it's become, as I said earlier, a lot more commoditized. It's become a product. I think it's something that people see as relatively straightforward to do. With a heat pump, it's quite we're taking things out of people's house, we're changing the whole heating system. It's quite a disruptive process. Whereas solar, in a day, we can install a solar array on someone's house, and it can make a difference immediately to their energy bills as well. So yeah, it's become incredibly popular. You mentioned electric vehicles. I think there's a quite a natural step. We speak to a lot of clients who say, I've just bought an electric car, or I've just ordered an electric car, and I would like to have solar panels too. And I think there's a lot of what we do is just setting expectations, managing clients' expectations. So I'd like to charge my car from solar. And it's a lovely thought, but the reality is, if your car's at work during the day and you come home at night to plug it in, and the solar's not generating electricity, you're not going to be directly charging your car from the solar. And even then, a car batteries are are, 60, 70, 80 kilowatts. They're huge. So a lot of what we're doing is setting a client's expectations and really designing a system that best meets their needs.
No, really, really insightful. Daniel, what's your experience here?
Just really interested in what you said, Jason, about the way that people can choose to use the lower tariffs overnight, because like you said, that's something fairly new. And I know even some companies like Octopus do a flexible tariff that can vary even throughout the day, depending on energy usage around the UK. So how genuinely interested, how does it work in terms of once you've installed a battery, let's say, and some solar panels for someone, how do they control when their battery draws power from the grid or not to kind of top itself up?
Yeah, as you say, the sort of tariff market is changing rapidly, and Octopus, as you mentioned, so that they came into the market as a big disruptor a few years ago, and the big energy suppliers are really playing catch up with them. So a lot of the innovative tariffs are around Octopus, but I would encourage people to look elsewhere as well. And there's some really good websites, comparison websites, YouTube channels that look at all these different tariffs. I think there is I think the main thing is the overnight charging is absolute huge benefit. But it really depends how much detail clients want to go into. We have some clients who are just like, yeah, just set it up and just I don't want to think about it. And it'll charge up overnight and I don't want to think about it, and it'll discharge during the day, and I just want to see every month that my energy bills have been reduced. Or you get some clients who are absolutely all over the tech. And when 15 years ago we used to install an array and they just had a little energy meter with numbers on that told them how many kilowatt hours they were generating. And now obviously the data that they can draw from their solar is there's so much detail on there and so much information. We employ someone and all their job is to do is to look after our existing customers, answer questions around tariffs, they're studying data on what does this mean and how do I best get the greatest benefit from the array. So it's gone from very, very, very simple data to almost too much now. But I think it's about really sort of understanding what the client's trying to achieve and designing a system and then advising them on the best tariffs available for what they're trying to achieve.
No, really, really fascinating. Michael, can we move on to extensions? Is that okay? Because I think we've spoken a lot about new properties and old properties. But the thing that connects them both is building your big kitchen extension or the garage in your bedroom above. How can you balance that with an old property whilst looking at new standards? And what is that process? Should people be extending? Should people be moving to new homes? I appreciate there isn't a one size fits all, but do your best to give the listeners a good insight there.
Yeah, absolutely. There, you did hit the nail on the head with one size fits all or one size doesn't fit all. It depends on what they're trying to achieve. So there are, and I'm thinking of projects that we've got in the office where they literally do just want a sort of a 3 by 3 meter, or in principle, a 3 by 3 meter extension on the rear to house a kitchen. Open up a wall between so they've got that space in. It's more about space than trying to achieve that. Than trying to achieve something necessarily more. With those sorts of clients, it's discussing what their options are and what their future plans are. They might want that at the moment, but actually, if we go and design this for you and set this up and all the rest of it, is it going to cause issues with something that you've thought about doing down the line but haven't necessarily wanted to do at the moment? And that might be something along the lines of, we want to do this extension, but we also want to do replace our windows and insulate the house and go for an MVHR and an air source heat pump system. Okay, fab. So we just got to make sure that what we're doing here is going to coordinate and work well with that. So there was one job that we did here in Tame, extension onto a bungalow. Wasn't a small extension, it was an extension to the bungalow. But what we did was how we insulated that extension meant that when it came to insulate the rest of the bungalow, it was a nice continuous envelope all the way around. And there was no awkward junctions between where the new met the old. So it's those sorts of conversations that you need to have as early as possible so that they're designed in right from the off. It's it's a bit the same things with sort of retrofitting and things like that. The sooner you can have those conversations and design them in, the less issues you're going to have down the line. And that works for any sort of extension, really. As we've got go up to the slightly larger ones where they want to do more to the house, again, it's the same thing. It's establishing what is it that their end goal is and how are we going to get there in the best possible way for you. It might be that it ends up becoming phased, in which case it's the same thing. Whether it's a new build or an extension, the principle is still the same. You want to make sure that everything's designed in to start off with. It might be that you're running pipes and ductwork that gets capped. You want to make sure that if you are putting an air source heat pump in at present, but you know there's going to be extenders to it, someone like Jason would need to make sure that air source heat pump is designed to suit the whole house, not just part of it. So say you're doing two extensions, but you can only afford to do one now. That air source heat pump needs to make sure it's going to work efficiently for the other one. Otherwise, it's going from its sort of perfect performance and running to suddenly being overstretched when you then come to connect it in down the line. And that also works for the same principles as the smart tech that you want to put in a home. And you can run everything wirelessly, digitally, or most things wirelessly and that, but actually running cables to everywhere and making sure you've got the cables for the appropriate kit that you want to put in, it's the same thing. You just want to design everything in as early as possible and have those conversations as early as possible. We don't get me wrong, we've had conversations with clients where you do the extension, you're partway through the building works, and then they go, well, why, what about this? You could have spoken to me about that 6 months ago. And then you've got to try and work it out. And there's always solutions, there absolutely is, but having those conversations as early as possible with whoever you're going to be working with, whether it's an architect, a designer, a company that is going to do the heating solution, or it's the tech, is the earlier you can have those conversations, even if it's just initial ones, you're going to save yourself such a headache down the line, because at least it's all considered. And that's the important thing about what we do. Everything needs to be considered, and at least, you know, even if it's a route you decide not to go down, at the end of that process you can go, well, at least I made an informed decision as to which route I went down.
Absolutely. And Daniel, just coming across to you in terms of tech, how do you decide the right tech to go to? How, in terms of, we're talking internally, how do you make that decision making process?
It's a good question, and it does link quite nicely to what Michael was saying, because often we get questions from customers or from architects who are doing extensions or doing work on their home and think rightly that that's a good opportunity to get some more tech in. There are lots of companies out there that do what we'd call proprietary tech, which is often requires the wiring behind the walls and can be very effective, but is also very expensive. The benefit of the consumer tech that people can buy in Tesco's and John Lewis off Amazon is that often it is plug and play. So whilst there is an element of kind of wanting to pre-design things, you can get a smart speaker that you just plug into a socket, and you can get two of them around the room and they will play at the same time and give you a really nice full room of sound. And they could also be ones that you can speak to ask them to play your favorite track from Radiohead or whoever it might be. And particularly for extensions, people like the big three really that people are after, which I would also recommend, are smart lights, because you want to be able to control the lights, particularly if it's a nice kitchen extension, for example, and you can get smart light bulbs. So you don't need to do some complicated rewiring. If you forget to do it during the design process, you can buy some smart light bulbs. The light bulb above me, I just took out the old one, put the new one in, and now I can control it from my phone or from a switch on my desk. And so they set a really lovely ambiance for the room. You can change the colors, you can change the brightness. You can even tell them to come on to make it look like your home when you're away. So they also add that element of security, and you can just control that in the app. And we always show customers exactly how to do that, so they feel comfortable doing it. So as well as lights, smart speakers are really popular because people like being able to play music. They like being able to ask the speaker to play that music for them. I imagine there's a lot of people out there that have had an argument with Alexa or with Google where they just won't quite listen to what you're saying. But I've personally experienced that. They have not got better in the last few years, but that it will be coming to an end because the ChatGPT moment for smart speakers is coming this year. So the Alexa smart speakers, the Google smart speakers, and others are starting to get that smart voice assistant that can actually understand what you're saying. Without you having to remember, turn light bulb 7 off, you can just say, I want the lights off in the kitchen, and it will know what you mean. And then you can also get smart displays. So these can be perfect for displaying photos of your family, if you've got Google Photos, Apple Photos, that kind of thing. But they can also be linked to, say, a doorbell or a camera. So quite often people like having a smart display in their kitchen that they can play music on, but then and view recipes for what they're cooking. But then if someone rings a doorbell at the other end of the house, their Ring doorbell can connect to their Alexa display and show them immediately who's there. And those are just just plug in. You don't need to do any complicated rewiring. You just need to set it up right. So there's a whole load of amazing things that people can do that people don't actually often realize. And often it comes from when you get tech A to talk to tech B, which just requires a bit of knowledge to get it working. But it doesn't have to be super expensive. You can buy these things off the shelf, and they really do work quite well.
Amazing, amazing. So it's your turn to be a DJ for a moment. Is tech going to help you with a good song choice? What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
Depends whether tech will help me, but my song choice is Rock DJ by Robbie Williams from the year 2000. And the reason this is my choice is that now that's what I call Music 47. This was the very first song on that compilation album. And as I was growing up and hitting my teenage years, this was one of my favorites. And it's a joke amongst my friends that this is the album I always go to, and this is the first song that always comes on.
This is the Business Brunch podcast from Get Radio, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Today we've been talking all about technology and energy and really ensuring, as I think Michael said earlier in the show, that your home's a comfortable place, which I think is important to all of us. Jason, I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. Your firm has a wonderful reputation. I think that people that have worked with you would know that, but also people listening to your knowledge and honesty today. But there are a lot of places that you can buy solar and heat pumps and as we've said, the wrong things. So what are some of the things that our listeners should be listening out for? They should be using you, obviously, but I can say that. But just kind of speaking quite broadly, what are some of the things to kind of consider if they are considering solar or heat pumps or changing energies? What should they be asking potential suppliers?
So it's I think if you look at the renewables market as a whole, it's been, we call it the solar coaster. It's been incredibly unpredictable over the last 15 years. In 2012, there were 5,000 registered PV installers. That went down to less than 1,000 by 2017. Now they've come back again. I think what I would say is talk to people, ask them for references, obviously, like we're buying anything. But how long have they been installing? Are they, and a critical thing is who's actually going to do the installation? So you can be sold on someone coming into your home and talking wonderfully, and they could present very well. You could be sold on them, but who's actually going to walk through the door and do the work? Is it going to be people directly employed by that company, or is it going to be a bunch of subcontractors that these individuals have very little relationship with? So I would say using a company that's got directly employed installers is critical. What's their experience? How long have they been doing it? And are they, do you feel that they are trying to sell you something that is, their preference, or are they really understanding what you're trying to achieve and thereby tailor-making a product, whether that's, solar or batteries or heat pumps, that's really suitable for you and meeting your needs? And ask them to go and see. We're really, really happy to show customers our installations, take them around to customers. Heat pumps, for example, people always want to know how noisy they are. So we come and listen to one, and you can meet one of our customers as well. So, and I think lots of multinational companies and big national companies installing now. I think a lot of our customers like the fact that we're local, like the fact that if there are issues, we can, probably normally within 24 hours, we can have someone on site. We've got technical support for heating and solar in the office. We can answer a lot of questions, sort a lot of problems out on the phone. So, yeah, those are the sort of the key things that
Absolutely.
I would suggest.
No, totally. And I think broader business, I think it's the right thing to buy local.
Yeah.
It's good for the environment.
If you're doing
Every
something, it's a sustainable decision. You're making a
yeah.
decision around sustainability, and actually having a local company is really key to that. We do lots of work for developers as well as retrofitting. So we work with Pye, owned by Blenheim, and they like to use local companies because it's all part of their sustainability within the company as a whole.
No, totally, totally. And I'm going to go very off topic, if that's okay, Michael. And because I think one of the things that we've learned through 260 episodes of this show and 600 guests or something like that has really been that we shouldn't presume that we know what we know, if that makes sense. So I guess what would be really helpful is for you just to share the process of working with an architect. Like when should you talk to an architect? At what point? And what is that process?
That's exactly it. Unfortunately, no one knows what they don't know. So it doesn't matter whether someone's gone through this process before or a similar process. There's always new, whether it's new regulations, new planning, new anything, and also new opinions as well. So it's the be an end all, if you like, before I waffle on further down the line, is the sooner you can get an architect involved, the better. That very initial conversation is really, really important. Our job, if you like, is or how I describe it to clients throughout the process is always we're here as advisors. We will advise you on what we think, based on our experience and our skill base, is what we feel is suitable for you. That doesn't matter whether it is a small internal remodel or a massive 4,000 square foot home. Our advice is there. It's built from, as I say, experience, skill, the education, any sort of conversations that we have with professionals like yourselves and that kind of thing. So the sooner you can have that conversation and have that discussion, the better, because it will inform your decision moving forwards. It's very, very common for if I looked and I had the brief written down from clients from every single new build we've ever had, 99% of them will say, we want it to be warm, we want it to be light, we want it to be open, we want four bedrooms and an ensuite. That's brilliant. That's great. It's a good starting point. But actually, the things that fit your brief is, where's your site located? What's the orientation? What's the access like? How much do you have to spend? Is that how much you've got to spend, or is it that it needs to be phased? And the brief will develop and grow over time. And it might not be that we're not the best people for your job. It might be that we are. But until you've had that conversation, we can then help inform your brief and develop your brief. It's, we will have conversations with clients and then they'll disappear for a while and then they'll come back. That's also very common. There will be some clients that come to us off the back of recommendations that go, can we start now? Absolutely, we can start now if that's what you'd like, but let's just start working through that motion and understand exactly what it is that you're trying to achieve. And then we'll have that initial discussion. We'll then start working up the feasibility options. We'll show it to you in 3D so you can understand exactly how that space is going to feel. And that can be done on VR or through images or through floor plans, depends on the client and what they're comfortable with. Obviously, it gets tailored towards the client and what they're able to absorb. And then that develops forwards. And from those options, it becomes a pick a mix. And you choose the bits that they like and the bits they don't like, and then put it all together. And then that's what gets taken forwards. But what a lot of clients will have, they'll have their sort of concepts and ideas from friends and family or living in a space. And this goes for anything. It might be their previous experience of technology, previous experience of boilers, or all of that kind of information. But actually, when you start talking to them, their opinions and what they feel is appropriate isn't actually the route that they want. They might have wanted a 6-bedroom house, but actually, when they look at the space that they have, actually a 4-bedroom really fits their needs. But what they need is more or spaces that are have multiple uses and will develop over time for them. So a home for a family that's just about to have a baby, their needs are going to be different to 5 years' time when they've got a child at school. They might have had a dog by that stage. They're still in the home in 20 years after that. Actually, do they then want to have access to the first floor if they have accessibility issues? In which case, at the start, you need to make sure you design in a lift. They don't need to put in a lift, but that all needs to be part of that very early brief. So the sooner you can have that conversation and that, the less headaches you will have down the line. So it's just about talking.
Amazing, amazing. We are so almost at the end of the show. I can't believe how quickly an hour has gone, but I'm going to set the three of you a big challenge. We love to leave our listeners with a top tip. So, in a sentence, 5 or 10 seconds, I would love it if each of you would leave our listeners with one tip, whether it be something I've not asked you about, and apologies, I wish we could have gone for 2 hours, or whether it be something that we've spoken about already and you would love them to underline in their notepad. What's your last and top tip, Daniel?
If you buy any smart home tech from any company that you might see on the high street, Currys, John Lewis, Amazon, anything like that, you can come to Happy Smart Homes. Our network of local expert technologists can get that tech installed, set up, working for you, and you don't need to worry that you don't have the tools because we do.
Amazing. Jason, what's your lasting top tip?
I would say that the products that we sell are very expensive. Even with heat pumps, you're getting a £7,500 grant from the government. You're still your net cost. You're going to be spending a lot of money. Do your research. Don't just talk to one company. Talk to several companies. Come and talk to us as well. But really, look at all the options out there. And get to a position where you're going to make a really well-educated, informed decision about what's best for you.
Amazing. And last but certainly not least, Michael.
It follows on nicely from Jason. It is do your research, have your conversations, and it will allow you to make the decisions that work best for you. Because what decision works well for you doesn't work well for your neighbor or won't work well for a friend. So do your research, have conversations with the appropriate professionals, and it will allow you to maximize the benefits for what you're trying to achieve.
Amazing. Thank you so much. That is the end of the show. I can't believe how quickly time has flown. But if you are just tuned in, do follow our three experts on socials and online. We've had Jason Hobbins of Energy My Way. We've had Daniel Wallace of Happy Smart Homes and Michael Holliday of Palmer and Partners Architects. We are going to be back next week with some brand new guests talking about a really important topic, actually. We're going to be celebrating International Women's Day. And to do that, we're joined by Louise Gregory of Gregory Surveyors, Naomi Bidou of a non-profit organisation called Beat the Block, and Jenna Legg of Mooch Events. So promises to be a really, really interesting show. Finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this show on the online or on the radio anywhere in Oxfordshire at 11 a.m. every Sunday. If you prefer podcasts, do look out for the podcast version, which is available on any major podcast platform and is released on the Monday morning. And if you would like to see my lovely guests, do head over to the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday, and you can grab the video version. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.